As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Welcome to Simple Flight Radio.
It's a show about aviation, which connects our listeners with the people
and things
that bring aviation to life. We're your hosts.
I'm Al Waterloo.
And I'm Mark Eppner.
So buckle your seatbelts and let's start the show.
Let's start the show indeed. It's 8 o'clock Central Time Zone. That could only mean one thing. Oh, wait a minute. Al's not here. I better say it myself. Simple Flight Radio. But I am not alone, and this is Mark Eppner. I'm joined by friend of the show, Josh Boyne. Hi, Josh.
Good evening, Mark.
How are you?
I am doing swell. It's
well,
a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day. Chicago has seen spring yet another weekend. It's pretty exciting. We were up in the 70s today. A little hazy, but...
Take it over snow.
Take it over snow any day of the week. Absolutely. And I appreciate you coming in today. Al, you know, he got this new job, and we thought the weekend stuff was gone, and all of a sudden he said, I have to go pick up a customer in New York at 6 o'clock on Sunday night.
It's almost like he's, like, running to the store. Oh, I just have to go to New York.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Okay, so he gets in his Cirrus, and I think it's pretty cool.
That is pretty awesome.
But you can tell he's not married. I couldn't get away with that. You wouldn't know about that either. But you
I wouldn't know, unfortunately. So...
Anyway, we've got a great show, and not only made so because you're on with us, but got a lot of things to talk about here. We missed last week because I was in sunny Florida. Of course, at that point, the weather was still better in Chicago than in Naples, Florida, but that's okay. And Al had to be out of town. I forget where he was, so no one was able to get the remote going, if you will. Someone's got to be back here at the studio to launch it. So we apologize to everyone for not getting a show in next week, but as they say, we're back. So what have you been doing this week?
Well, this week has been pretty busy with flight instructing and flying around. And actually, last week I had a pretty interesting flight, if I might add.
Tell me more. Oh, great one.
Well, me and another friend of the show went to the big airport here.
Oh, DuPage.
A little bigger.
Obviously, you went to O'Hare.
Yes. Me and Eddie, Eddie and I.
Thank you. I was going to say, where did you learn your...
I'm a pilot. I fly airplanes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always like that shirt that says, I'm a pilot, and it spells pilot wrong six different ways, and it says, I fly airplanes. That's my spirit animal right there. But Eddie and I went flying around beautiful downtown Chicago last Sunday night. Unfortunately, you guys weren't here. Otherwise, we would have knocked on the door and said hello.
We would have could have done it in two planes.
Exactly. That would have been pretty sweet. Remote simple flight from two different airplanes.
We'll save that one for a future.
Okay.
So that's cool because Eddie, who's part of Chicago Approach.
He is, yes. So that was also a different thing that I've never experienced, was actually flying with an air traffic controller who also knew all the other air traffic controllers in the sectors. So he would call up a Skyhawk 6265 Tango over wherever we were, and he would end the transmission with, hey, Scotty, or hey, whoever, and all the controllers knew exactly who he was. And they actually stopped talking to the other planes to kind of jive with him a little bit, too,
I was flying in Eddie's sector, and I figured he'd recognize my voice. I was pretty sure it was him. This was a couple weeks ago. And I wanted to say, is that you, Eddie? But whoever I was talking to, might have been Eddie, seemed very busy. And I thought, this is totally inappropriate, you know, busy O'Hare time.
Sure.
So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to quiet and then somehow get a hold of him later and say, did you talk to me today? You know, but I never did.
No. There's been a couple times where I'm on with Chicago Approach, and if it's slow, I say, hey, is Eddie in the building? And they go, oh, yeah, hold on, let's see. And then they say he's working south or working wherever he is. But, last week it was definitely an experience. It was really cool to actually have a controller along with me in the airplane because he actually taught me a few things about air traffic control that I've never learned before in previous.
You know, we do a thank you barbecue every September at Palwaukee or Papa Whiskey Kilo. And the thank you is not only to the spouses of the pilots that belong to the Leading Edge Flying Club, but also to the line guys for taking care of our planes all year round and the controllers here at this field.
Unsung heroes.
What? They're pretty sung by me. But, yeah, so I remember taking a controller up, and he, you know, can I do the radios? He was a passenger. He hadn't been a pilot ever. Yeah. And it was so funny. He was having a blast in it. But it was also interesting because he was saying things like, oh, wow, I didn't realize how hard it is to see this intersection.
Right.
Or is this where you normally call in? He didn't have that perspective. So absolutely people should take a controller out to lunch or out just out in the field and say, hey, this is what we see and this is what we hear from you guys. And they pick up the disconnect sometime.
Sure. Yeah, no, I full-heartedly agree. Every time I'm up in the tower, I always tell the controllers up there that they're more than welcome to ride along, and I'd be more than happy to fly them. But yeah, last week we gone to Midway after a quick hop around downtown, got some few shots of beautiful downtown Chicago.
I saw those.
Yeah. Then went to Midway, did a stop and go there. Then took off and headed basically to where Eddie usually works, and kind of did a few holding patterns, just waiting for the rivals to let up a little bit. And unfortunately, they actually didn't have room for us, so we went to 3 Charlie Kilo Lake in the Hills.
Yep.
Picked up some fuel, which is my favorite thing to do, always buy some cheap gas. And then took off again and went over to Elgin. Basically, we went right over the top of Chicago Tracon's actual building and held there. Because they were using East Flow into O'Hare. 10 left is what we landed on. We actually did the landing there. Probably the shortest landing of any airplane at at that airport. We must have gotten off in less than 1,000 feet. Tower was like, you guys off already? I'm like, yeah. Unfortunately, we actually had to get off and taxi around, which was definitely an interesting thing in its own right.
Oh, my God. That's the toughest part of O'Hare is the ground.
Oh, yeah. And they gave us over ground control, and they did an excellent job giving us progressive to signature. Literally, if you take a look at where the FBO is and where 10 left is, we pretty much had to go at least 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 miles.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I land on 9 left with the regionals, and it's a 30-minute, like 4 or 5 mile taxi back to get to, you know, the main terminal, get
right
on the airline. So it's absolutely nuts.
Right, and we went all the way over to Terminal 1 pretty much on the Alpha taxiway, and I'm sitting on the right side, you know, as the instructor, and we're going by the terminal, and there's a 767, there's a 777, there's a 747, here we are in our little 172, just putt-putting along. I'm sure the passengers inside the terminal are like, what are they doing? Are they lost or something?
Yeah. Probably screaming, they're going to kill us!
Exactly. No, that didn't happen.
No.
Then Eddie says, you know, they have landing fees for Tracon controllers? So ground, he asked ground that, and then ground says, 6-5 Tango, what's your departure heading? 360, back to executive. Roger, taxi runway 9 right via, I forgot the taxiways, and we basically just then make a U-turn, taxi back, depart, and simple as that.
That's great. That's a great story. You know, we were just talking about having taking air traffic control out for lunch or take them up for a ride is the more important thing. And that reminds me so many times where controllers and pilots get together, so much great conversation comes out of it. And in the end, you get the, I didn't know that in the conversation. So it gives us a perfect segue. Eddie let me know today about the upcoming Chicago Aviation Symposium. And that is in Chicago, and this is sponsored by NATCA, and it's BTG, Bridge the Gap, Bravo Tango Golf. And they're holding it on June 25th at Louisville, Colorado. No, but it's Lewis University in Romeoville, Illinois. The airport designator is Lima Oscar Tango. And at this on June 25th, it's, I think, an all-day affair. You can go out to ChicagoAviationSymposium.com, and they'll have controllers from O'Hare, Midway, Chicago Approach, and Chicago Center there to really talk about their job and how they do it, detail their operations, and they'll be fielding questions, which I'm sure will just be a huge amount of the time, from pilots. And again, it's all around this Bridge the Gap program, which I love that they do because it brings the two groups closer together, which to me translates to safety.
Of course. I think I looked at the directions, the driving directions from here, and I was like, I think I'm going to fly there.
Yeah, I think it will fly. But I encourage, we have many listeners now, maybe those in Ecuador and Europe that listen to our show aren't going to be able to come. But if you're in the area, which could be anywhere within a 500-mile ring, June 25th, you know, I recommend that you come on out to Lewis University in Romeoville, Illinois, again, Lima Oscar Tango, and talk to the people that really help us, and we help them too, right, to keep the skies safe. So don't forget Chicago Aviation Symposium. You know, one of the things before we get to our guest tonight that I was thinking as well was, and it just slipped my mind. How does that happen?
I don't know.
I said, oh, before I go to Janine, I got to mention this. And then as soon as I start talking, this just became that and totally slipped my mind.
So I've had a few instruction moments like that where a student asked me a question. I started saying something and I go, now what was the question again?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm getting too old.
Yeah, don't say that. You're younger than my son. So anyway, but one, we'll come back to that after we have a chat with Janine. And Janine, for those of you that are, again, familiar with the show, we once a quarter or so, we bring Janine Iannarelli on from Par Avion Limited to talk to us about what she's seen in the business jet market. Par Avion is a broker for selling lots of business jets out there and always gives us an insight and perspective of what's going on in the industry. Matter of fact, I see that Martin, I think Martin's a jet jockey. He's listening to us from Davenport tonight. So welcome, Martin. Hope it's a great evening. Hope we keep your attention. But I'm going to go ahead and push these little magic buttons and see if we can't get Janine on. And hard to find it. She should be coming on here. Right now.
Hello.
Janine.
Hey, guys. How are you this evening?
Good. How's things in Houston?
You know, I was almost going to say drying out, and then somewhere around, 3 o'clock this afternoon, the skies opened up again.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, no kidding. Even for us, no kidding. I asked someone, I went to a dinner party, an early dinner party, and I said, did anyone have any inkling that we were supposed to have a downpour or extended showers? And they're like, heck no. And typical spring weather here in the South. Well, you all know this well, in the tornado belt, tornado warnings all over the place, and there you have it.
Yeah, but you're not, I mean, the rain that you guys are getting in Texas, the amount of moisture is not typical this time of year, right? This is like huge.
Let me tell you, if they call it a 500-year flood one more time, then they're going to have to change that to the 6-month flood, because it sure seems like it's happening a whole lot faster than every 500 years.
Yeah, I've been seeing pictures on the news at night and owners carrying their dogs wading in water that's up to their chest themselves. How about where you live? Are you running into the same kind of thing?
No, not right where I am. I mean, I'm pretty high and dry. And I think that this particular front that came through Sunday night into Monday kind of parked itself just north of the city, north and west. And there was some activity in the Gulf that I think caused it to be stationary. But still, in the general vicinity, we were getting 3 inches an hour for several hours.
That's nuts.
I think it's time to invest in some seaplane operations down there then.
There you go.
You know, I don't know if we have any of our listeners from that group up in Conroe at Lone Star where they have a seaplane base. But they may have gotten it right, you know, taking a retro perspective on aircraft transportation.
Did you know we were at Conroe, Al and I, about a month ago?
Oh, tell me you were there for that.
Mod Aero?
Yeah, I wasn't. Where was I? Give me the date and I'll tell you where I was.
You expect a lot out of me. I'm going to say end of March, maybe March 25th or-ish, something like that. It was a Thursday, Friday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, somewhere in there.
It was earlier than that because you know where I was?
Where were you?
Brussels.
Brussels, that's not a good place to be in the spring, not when we see them in the news. Were you there?
I was. What do you think I just said?
And were you there when the airport issue, the bombing?
No, I left a few days before that, but I was there during the initial raids they were doing. I had a bird's eye view. I was at that hotel, the Sheraton, directly across the street from departures. My room overlooked departures, and I was working on the airport for the week. I was there. I saw the shortcomings, and I said something to someone. I said, this is, you know, for a city where the EU meets on a regular basis, y'all's got security down, not to a science.
Yeah. Wow. I guess they should have listened to you, and maybe now they will. Yeah, that was sad.
Who really listens to me? It's always after the fact, but then they don't want to admit that.
Well, we're listening to you right now. So
I know you are. There you go.
Yeah.
I got a recurring gig here.
Yeah, indeed. And so with that as a segue, you know, as again, for our listeners that are familiar with you, you've always seemed to have your finger on the pulse of what's going on, mostly from the business aviation perspective, but we touch on the piston side as well. So maybe you can give us some insight as we look at the last quarter and what you're seeing. How's business in general aviation?
Well, you know, broad stroke, across the board, declining values, rising inventory, lack of interest globally in the product. You know, again, let's start with the business jet sector of the market. And if I quote some of the surveys or research that's done by the big financial analysts, I think of UBS, who runs a monthly survey among people in the trade, and they're showing steep declines, particularly among large jet, large cabin. Let's just speak right to the sector of the market that I deal in, but I felt it long before. I mean, it's the perfect storm going on. We have a decline in interest among the BRIC countries. We have Europe that is still pretty stagnant. We have a lack of growth in any one industry that typically people in the resale marketplace would turn to. When one declines, just look for another. There's none rising to the top. And the numbers are off in North America as well, which the rest of the world was looking to as the great savior for the resale marketplace. That's broad stroke again, biz jets, turboprops, and I think we briefly, before the show started, talk about pistons. And with the exception of the Cessna product line, let's just lump all the models under the one make, we see a significant rise in inventory in the last 6 months, as much as 20%.
Which means people aren't buying.
Which means people aren't buying.
So now you talk a lot about the aftermarket or used market. Does this also serve as an indicator for new, or are they two different statistics or data points that we watch?
They're really two different ones, but I think there is a general slowdown across the board. And it started with Gamma releasing the figures that were provided to them by the OEMs. And of course, I think we spoke the last time I said that a couple of the manufacturers had not reported by the time the State of the Industry report took place in Washington, D.C. in mid-February. But subsequently, it was no surprise for those of us in the know that we saw decreased numbers. And what's scary is the gap that's growing between new equipment and pre-owned. And I've reflected upon it in the last couple of weeks in particular, where the OEMs are creating their own problem in a way. And I don't mean just aircraft manufacturers. Let's talk about the providers of the products that continue to support the aircraft as we move into the next-gen avionics requirements. I mean, think about it. When you have an aging aircraft that has already sold off so much value because of market decline since 2008, and suddenly you're faced with the need to make improvements in order to stay relative as the next gen is implemented, and those costs easily reach one-fourth the value of your current asset and exceed it in some cases. Seriously, are you going to continue to operate an airplane? That is where I think the real decision point is faced, where people may say, I'm done. I'm totally done. I fly 100 hours a year, 150, maybe even 200. And sure, it's far more expensive to pick up a piece of an airplane than it is to own the whole asset, but not when you're faced with improvement costs such as we are seeing today.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I've heard it echoed among the trade that the OEM is self-imploding.
So does that drive people, and again, I apologize for my ignorance on the subject, but when someone says, you know, for these used jets, it costs more to bring them up to today's standards, doesn't that somehow drive new jet sales?
No.
Evidently not.
Think about the difference in price. For example, you buy a classic Falcon 2000. Let's just use $5 million as the round number.
Some change.
Yeah, for some people.
You know, it's some change in the world of aircraft operations today at that level. And the aircraft at $5 million is cosmetically acceptable, maintenance, nothing major coming due. Avionics-wise, it may face some challenges to upgrade, but the replacement today is a Falcon 2000 LXS, $32 million.
Wow.
You can buy a lot of fix and a lot of gas with the delta between the two.
Between now, 5 and 32, 27 million, I'd say so.
Yep.
You know, granted you have an aircraft that's 20-plus years older and anywhere from, let's call it a low of 4,000 to upwards of 12,000 hours total time, but they don't build these aircraft to expire.
Right.
They build them to keep on going. So it then becomes a personal preference at that point in time. And even with bonus depreciation, seriously, I know what I could do with the Delta.
Absolutely. And to your point that you made earlier, and we may have talked about it last time, I'm not sure, but I'll say it again just to make sure it's covered. I was talking to someone and here at Chicago Executive, Papa Whiskey Kilo, you know, we have a lot of corporations who have their corporate flight departments here, including Motorola with some cool Gulfstreams and things like that, and they shut down their operation. They decided to go to fractional for Motorola, right? One of the major corporations in the world. And they let go of all their pilots, and they're going to, I guess, sell off their airplanes.
Wow. That's not totally unheard of. Still a bit surprising.
Yeah.
I'm speechless. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, maybe you can sell their Gulfstreams for them.
You know what? If they're listening, they know who to call.
There you go. Par Avion Limited. You know, going down that path, I asked someone, and this person was not as involved in the industry, so it may have just been, let's call it conjecture or something, but you know, I said, wow, why would they do that? And they talked about this remaining negative connotation from, you know, 8 years ago, whenever we had that meltdown and all those auto manufacturers hopped on their corporate jets to talk to the government. And everyone said, here they're asking for a buyout on their business problems, and they're flying their personal jet. Does that still exist where people think it's more of a luxury than an important business tool?
I would say so. You know, I think the sentiment that runs a bit deeper, or I should say the analogy the average person makes between someone who operates a private jet is with that of the evil hedge fund manager. And I'm using the description that our government has often lumped aircraft operators in with. I mean, I distinctly remember several press conferences out of the White House where anyone who owned a private jet was singled out as having procured that aircraft with ill-begotten wealth or by means which were less than above board, and therefore they were evil. So there certainly is a negative stigma that exists. And, it perhaps was a bit more harsh back in 2009, 2010, when companies were reinventing themselves. and we're learning how to do more with less. There were layoffs, there were cutbacks, there was retrenching. There was a little bit of fear rampant among the workforce where they understood we're being handed an extra workload, we're going to absorb this burden so we can continue in our job. And companies became leaner, right, and essentially more efficient. It was perhaps not the right time to go out and buy a business jet while you're making these other cutbacks. And though we, as an industry or a country as a whole, have moved past that, there is that lingering, gnawing feeling that somebody has eyes on me, even though I'm fully justified and can substantiate the need in a publicly traded company, because, you know, there's plenty of private organizations that have not returned to the buying fold out of fear, out of that negative stigma, but also out of the other feeling they have when they look at the value of their airplane relative to the market today and what it's going to cost to continue to operate. And they're just done.
So is this a short-term thing? You know, I don't know what the previous quarter, no offense, but I don't remember. I mean, are we a trending down, or is it kind of a heartbeat type thing, up a quarter, down a quarter, up a quarter? What's it looking like, and what do you think is coming down the pike?
Well, I think that assessment is more like it, up, down, depending on who you talk to, you might get a different response. For the rest of the calendar year in 2016, I think we're going to see declining numbers, a decline in demand. Election years are horrible, I think, as I've voiced in the past, and that I think was the premise for my coming on the show this time, is to discuss how an election year impacts the resale marketplace. And there's a terribly negative impact, for the most part, because people don't like uncertainty. The markets don't like uncertainty, regardless of what we're trading in. And there's this perhaps ill-conceived notion that if we have a different party come into power come next January, that things are going to change dramatically. I mean, I'm here to tell you, I don't see how anyone could turn anything around in a short period of time. Repeal of certain tax laws, you know, nice to think about in certain cases, but likely not necessarily to happen. Confidence is the key. Confidence is the key to anything in terms of success. I think with the market, when I say the market, I speak to that of aircraft sales predominantly in the United States, is looking for a change that ensures long-term stability and growth. And fear from unexpected side swipes or radically different policy that changes how everyone does business. That sounds probably pretty vague, but the truth of the matter is that if you don't have confidence that you can sustain your business, never mind grow it, sustain it, eventually expand it, let's say in a five-year plan, you're not going to make big moves anywhere in the short term, because you want to still stay cash rich and nimble and flexible and deal with the inconveniences and maybe the intangible growth that you're forfeiting by not having a business tool such as a business jet, in favor of solidifying your position within your respective market.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, you know, you talk about, we normally just divide this up into Democrat versus Republican in terms of which way is it going to go. It seems to me we have Democrat, Republican, and Donald Trump. this year, so ads, and you know, things look like Trump's going to get the nomination. I have no clue what any of these guys will do, because all they, and on both sides, just seem like they spend time telling us why the other person sucks. And so how does anyone know what's going to happen, what kinds of things they want to do, when no one talks about what they are going to do other than we'll be better?
That's why an election year is a year that we all might as well go on vacation till next January.
But it is interesting. It is interesting that we now have Trump, who has multitude of airplanes, which I don't know if you saw, he didn't get his registered last year, but that's another story for another time. But you have a candidate with a large asset such as a 757. I honestly can't think of a larger business jet than that, maybe a 747, who is using it constantly for campaigning, and it's always in the public arena. He has all these events with it in its centerpiece, having his big, giant airplane. Do you think that's going to be changing any of the public mindset or any mindset in their views of corporate aviation and business jets?
No. You know, frankly, I don't think people see the business jet and say, wow, Donald Trump, you know, has all these trappings of success. I really don't. They see it as a means for him to get from point A to point B, and they see that he owns it. But I don't know if anyone's really been able to formulate a thought and say that means he's successful and that's why he has that business jet. Certainly what I appreciate is the fact that he's demonstrating with what ease he can get from appointment to appointment to appointment. We don't really see how the rest of the candidates get there. I'm sure all of them have chartered aircraft of some sort or another. And they're not riding around in small jets. When you go and do that, you know there's a number of lessors out there that routinely provide something like a 727, DC-9, I guess, still, maybe 737 for the teams to be moved around. It's just not as visible.
And what's interesting, on the other side of the aisle, you have Bernie Sanders, who a couple months ago, they always touted him riding coach and everyone taking pictures of him on the Delta flight in the middle aisle or middle seat. And now he's actually riding along in business jets. I know they're keeping it hush-hush, but that's definitely not the case.
Oh, yeah. There's no way he can get to have to his campaign appointment without private transport. No way. And that's what a business jet or business aircraft does, right? Gets you from point A to point B to C to D to E in the same day, in the middle of nowhere, and allows you to effectively and efficiently use your time.
But I will say that other than pilots, I bet you 99%, and here I am speaking like the expert, of people that are not attuned to aviation don't even think about how did this person get to Chicago in the morning and L.A. at night or whatever they're doing. I don't think people think about that at all, the general public.
Not at all.
They don't. They don't, and that's why the industry as a whole is somewhat flown below the radar scope, excuse the pun, because people don't formulate the how-tos. They just see what's exactly in front of them. And that's why I say, to Trump's credit, notice he stages all his political rallies right there at the airport, and I don't think that's done just as a matter of convenience.
Yeah, might be, might not. I'm not sure. I was in Des Moines. This was before this all started. And there was his Trump 757 before he even announced he was running, I think. It was just kind of weird to see. Cool, but weird.
Yeah.
So, Janine, I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm actually a flight instructor here at Chicago Executive. And a few of my students, three of them, their sole intent to getting their pilot's license is to then go out and buy airplanes, to then go out and build their business and go out and use it for utility, which I find really fascinating because before I was an instructor, I never imagined someone would actually do that. I just imagined that people would just get their license for fun or they would charter an airplane.
Well, I see a lot more of that here in Texas, perhaps, than in other areas. I have plenty of friends that, for one, it's a love, but they help facilitate running, for example, their oil and gas business, where they routinely have to find themselves down in South Texas or out in Midland. And if they fly and they buy the right aircraft that'll meet their needs, then they can combine the two and get to a meeting out in Midland and then move it over to Fort Worth and come back down to Houston all in the same day.
Yeah.
So I do quite a bit of that here, actually.
Well, and to that point, Josh, you know, I have middle of the week standing meetings in Peoria, Illinois, in the middle of the week, and then I'm trying to do the same in Dearborn, Michigan. And I keep thinking, and then I need to get to Columbus, Ohio. What better way for me in the same week to do a Peoria, Dearborn, Columbus run?
Sounds like the perfect use for an airplane.
I think so. It's just, you know, weather and then making sure I have access because I don't own one. But it.
You could do that in one day, I bet.
I could. I would need to spend more time at the site. Certainly the travel can be accomplished. Certainly over 3 days to be in three different cities and spend the day at my client site would be a perfect use of the airplane. So I'm going to start trying to do that at least a little bit more. You know, certainly weather gets in the way, and my company, I think, prefers me to take the airlines. But that's, you can't do that. I have to spread it over to a couple of weeks because I can't do a turnaround from Peoria to Detroit and Detroit to Columbus, then Columbus to Chicago in a short period of time.
No, can't do it.
Trials and tribulations.
So, Janine, I know you said that's a little down market, but is there any one specific airplane or product that's just flying off the shelves that can't be explained why? Any one type of airplane or model?
You hear silence.
I guess not.
No. It's sad to say. You know, here's an interesting factoid, only because nobody expected it, I think. You certainly are familiar with the Gulfstream G650 aircraft.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, baby.
I've sat in it before, twice.
There you go. Subsequently, they built the 650ER. And, Mark, we might have had this discussion 2 years ago where we talked about they were as hard to find as hen's teeth. And what's gone from a market where there was nothing available and whatever came available had a premium attached to it. Today is a market where published figures show 19 for sale, round numbers. But the real market with quote unquote off market availability is probably closer to 30, 32. And I can assure you that Gulfstream would not want to support that number or validate any of that. But in 3 years' time, and part of what's contributed to that is China. I think China probably was one of the biggest consumers of that ultra long range, more status symbol type airplane.
Right.
And it's when I see things like that to shock me. When I think about the market environment we've been in for 8 years, and I've done this for quite some time now, and I've seen my share of downturns. In fact, when they talked about the last pending oil and gas downturn, I just shook my head and said, well, we've been through a few of them. But always what there's been is another industry you could turn to or another region of the world. And that doesn't exist today. And consequently, we see inventory piling up and the buyers shrinking. We're down to where we were analyzing the demographics of who buys our aircraft today. And we are sincerely talking about ultra high net worth individuals. And that's too small a marketplace to support the aviation industry as it exists today.
Yeah, of course. So what's the answer? Is there secret sauce here, or magic bullet, or silver bullet, I'll call it, to fix it? Or is this the world in which we live?
It's the world within we live today. And there's no one simple answer. I think it's a multitude of things that need to change. But if there was one fairy dust I could sprinkle around the global markets, it would have to be confidence. And how you build confidence that the consumers will find their way back to your product, whatever that product is, and that you will once again be a robust company, and then you in turn will make investments in your business, capital improvements, and one of which is buying a business aircraft, and beyond companies making a business investments. where it becomes not a bad thing to be able to acquire the trappings of wealth and someone not chastising you for it. Why not? Employs an awful lot of people around the world, doesn't it?
Sure does. I'll say this. I have $100 in my pocket. Yeah. I'll put it on his down payment for a G650. Maybe a 550. I'll go as low as that.
I'll take a G1.
I think I could defuse.
There was a G2 here the other day.
I think the very first G2 here was about a year ago. Is it back?
No, it wasn't that.
Okay. So, Janine, let's now that we've depressed everybody, because we all want to see aviation succeed, what else is going on? You know, I heard that you maybe had an appointment to a commission.
I think we've talked about the governor's committee, Texas Aerospace and Aviation Advisory Committee. I'm starting to really enjoy that one. I have this title, which I kind of dismissed. I just thought someone's got to lead the group, right? And they call me the presiding officer, and it didn't really mean much to me until I was in Austin last week. And you show up for a meeting with several of the people involved in the governor's office, and suddenly support staff are very deferential, and it's like, presiding officer has arrived. Uh-huh. Presiding officer is here. And I'm like, really?
There's
seriously?
An officer in the building.
A volunteer. As far as I see it, I'm, you know, part of the nonprofit group that's helping you all out.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, I guess I'm going to have to learn to navigate my way around things like that, but we're just getting that kicked off. But maybe it had to do with the European Business Aviation Association.
Yeah, that's what I was, the EBAA Sales and Acquisition Committee.
Oh, yeah. They had newly formed subcommittees among the associate members that support the general membership. And I was tapped to participate in the Sales and Acquisition Committee. And we're finding our footing, so to speak. We held our first meetings in Brussels. That infamous week.
Yeah.
And the idea behind the committee is to outline basically bullet points that the associates or the members can refer to as safety measures before they enter into a transaction. It's not meant to guide them in how to conduct a transaction, but basically generate the questions they should be asking themselves or of other professionals before they commit to any sort of transaction. So one of the founding, members of that committee, we're new. We're going to have our second meeting in Geneva here in another month or so. And stay tuned.
And I want your job. You get to travel all over the world.
Yeah, Josh is young, Janine. He doesn't understand. It sounds cool now.
My scope of travel is within 100 nautical miles of the airport.
Yeah.
You know, there are days I have woken up and I've sat there and I went, where am I?
What country am I in?
Yeah, I do that every day I wake up in my house.
Where am I? You know, there's a certain point in time that you start to say to yourself, home looks pretty good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm loud and clear on that one. Hey, one of the other things that we heard, it's something about you making the Final Four for the Texas Business Women of the Year Award.
I'll validate that one. That's truth, not rumor.
Woo! Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
What's going to happen there?
Well, it already did, so we're past that point. That came as quite a surprise. I was flattered. Wasn't sure if the call was real when I got it the first time, and then it sunk in. And the company I was keeping was pretty lofty people to associate with. So they brought us all together in Austin Thursday and Friday. Friday was the big day, and we were all awarded for making the Final Four out of however many they weeded out in the state. And I found another really rewarding session because they did it beautifully where they have a Q&A session for the audience. And the audience was a mixed crowd, which I also really enjoyed. Young, old, established, people changing careers. And there were a lot of really good questions put forth that you had the opportunity to show what contributed to your own success, what you would do differently. And it allowed you a lot of reflection upon where you've been and what you're doing today.
So when do they pick out the final one?
The final one as far as the question or the person that won?
The one final four, that means to me three people are going to go bye-bye.
Yeah, well, I was one of the bye-byes, but the winner was well-deserved. A young woman out of Boston who's a jewelry designer. This was her third nomination. And so three times a charm,
absolutely,
though well-deserved. She's grown her business substantially in the last few years. And I was honored to be in the company of such a great group of women. And I come back to this Q&A session because it was unexpected, but it was very inspiring, even for myself, because it was very thought-provoking. Because once that's all said and done, you know, guys, I had to get in my car and drive back to Houston. And
not fly back?
You know,
Should be flying Gulfstream back or Falcon 2000.
You know what? I wanted freedom this time, so I elected to drive.
There you go. Well, a terrific recognition, though. The final four out of a bazillion people is pretty special.
No, it was. It was really, really a rewarding experience, and I appreciate the recognition, and there's always another year, right?
Absolutely.
That's what Cubs fans have been saying.
Yeah. Well, but unlike the Cubs fan, she said this year's winner only had to wait 3 years.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, there you go.
Although this is the year for the Cubs.
I had a winner because I had a number of people approach me who were in attendance that said, you know, we make use of private aviation, but we're not really sure what we're doing. And it sounds like you know what you're doing. And I'm like, yeah, thank you. And we'd like you to come sit down with us.
Well, there you go. So, worth it right there.
Winner, right? At the end of the day.
That's cool. Well, congratulations. Feel like it's one of the family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
Great experience.
So anything else we should discuss? We kind of wrapped it up for the quarter.
No, I think we got the quarter under wraps. What's really going to be interesting is what we see at the end of the second quarter. Because traditionally then we head into the summertime blues. And the markets just drop off the face of the earth until September. So I think an early July wrap up, because gentlemen, I'm going to do the same. I'm going to drop off the face of the earth July and August. Going to do a little bit of exciting travel where I'll bring back news from around the world on aviation. But we've covered first quarter, which was basically blah.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you coming on as always to talk to us about it. We'll kind of get some sleep tonight, even though we've got those summertime blues. But it sounds like certainly there's an opportunity for improvement over the rest of the year, and we'll check in with you quarterly to get that, to get the story.
All right. Well, I'd like that. Well, great. It was wonderful to be able to participate with you again this evening.
And you as well. Have a great evening. Blue skies.
All right. To you all. Take care.
You too, Janine.
Have a good night.
Well,
now I want to buy a jet.
I want to help the economy.
Exactly.
That's what I want to do. Buy a jet. We do our part. You said you got $100. I bet you I could come up with $1,000. So maybe $1,100.
I'll call it $150.
All right.
I got some birthday money.
So. There you go. Happy birthday.
When was your
birthday?
April 14th, actually.
Yeah, just like everybody else that had a birthday in April, I forgot. I'm sorry. Yeah,
it's okay. I forgot it, too.
But did your family forget?
Well, I was instructing all day. I actually timed out.
Oh, no.
So that was my birthday present.
There you go.
8 hours of instruction.
So you're talking about instruction. Let's kind of head down that path. You know, people have talked to me about, hey, that should be your retirement job. And I think I would like advanced training of others. I'm not sure I'd like private training. I would enjoy the first student, and then I think I would kind of go on. Is that what you are finding as well?
You know, I thought I wouldn't like it when I first started, and I thought I wouldn't like it when I was doing my training. And it's actually something that has really grown on me, to actually be there and be with my student's family after he has completed his first solo. that was just amazing. A couple of weeks ago, I had a student do that, and his entire family, his in-laws, his wife's sisters, all his nieces and nephew, and his sons and daughters, all came out here, and they were around the airplane in hangar 5-6 of the ramp here. Signature was looking at us like, what are you guys doing? Well, like, I'm leading this like group of 20 people, explaining to them the traditions of cutting the shirt tails. And just the smile on his face is beaming from ear to ear, and I just swelled up in pride. It was just something... It was honestly like I had my first solo again, too.
That's cool. And I can see that. I know I was here at Leading Edge Flying Club when we had a young man that was, his goal was to solo on his 16th birthday, and his parents and his sister, you know, just three people that came out. But it was cool to talk to them and explain what was going on. And, you know, it was a goal that he achieved. And he did a go round, and his parents like, oh my God, what happened? And I said, hey, you just made a good, safe decision.
You probably want to go solo for longer.
Yeah, right. No, he just didn't feel right about
it.
And at 16, he exhibited the absolute right decision making, said, I'm not comfortable. I'm going around. And to talk his parents through what just happened, what was going through his mind, they were so proud of him. And so, like you said, they're beaming. I don't think, and I'm not around it enough, I would imagine that's the exception rather than the rule, that the whole family and friends and the support structure comes around to enjoy it, at least here in Chicago.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This was a special case because his family was actually visiting, I think it was Easter weekend, a couple weekends ago, when he did actually do his first solo.
Yeah, and I think we should make a bigger deal out of it.
Of course.
These are especially... for older people, that sounds strange, I'm sure, because you need to do it for everybody. But the reason why I say that, if you have someone, and I saw it in AOPA Flight Training Magazine, you know, some 60 or 70-year-old achieves a solo or achieves a pilot's license, it's a lifelong dream. Certainly,
right.
A 20-year-old has dreams for their entire life, but when you add 50 years to that or 40 years, I mean, it's been so long in the making. I don't think we take time to celebrate enough to say this is momentous, this is important, and congratulations.
And,
good,
you know,
job.
I would definitely agree with that, especially with the younger generation, because generally the people that are getting their license are doing it as a career. Yeah, you get your first solo, then you get your private, then you get your instrument, then your commercial multi, then commercial single. It just kind of starts to become ordinary again. I guess my experiences.
Yeah, well, at work, and I'm in sales, so I'm competitive. And, you know, the old saying, at least that I say, and I'm sure I did not come up with this, there's many sentiments about this, that I hate losing more than I like winning. When I win, I expected to win, and I don't celebrate. I just say, okay, I want to move on. When I lose, it really gets to me. And so, again, this concept of knowing when to celebrate, and you know, here in Chicago, we've got Joe Madden as the skipper of the Cubs, and he says things like, don't let the pressure exceed the pleasure. He says things like, enjoy the challenge. I forget exactly what it is, but all these things that I kind of put to the side just because I'm focused on not letting the negatives result happen, and I wish I did celebrate the positives more. And we in aviation should do that. Now, you had told me before the show started that you recently went to a non-towered or pilot-controlled field with a student.
Multiple times. I have a lot of students that are just getting ready to solo, so we're doing multiple landings at multiple different airports.
Okay, and you said you had a rant. I didn't hear or see your rant.
Yeah, I had
a little Twitter
rant on it yesterday.
Tell me more.
I won't say exactly what airport this is.
Fine.
But I go to it quite often. It's in the Chicago metropolitan region, if you would. And the winds were about 130 at 7 to 9 knots, I believe, somewhere around there. Nice, generally good crosswind for my student who's working on crosswind landings. They have a runway 9 and they have a runway 20. Runway 9, 4,000 feet long. Runway 20 is the nice 7,000 footer.
Everybody is now looking through the Chicago sectional and has just identified which airport you're talking about, but go ahead.
All right. Well, I didn't say it, so. We're doing our full stop taxi backs as it's school policy. There's another airplane doing touch and goes on runway 9. The winds are favoring runway 9, and we're announcing that we're lining up and waiting. because the airplane is on the roll in front of us for runway 9. We hear an airplane. I won't also say the model of that airplane.
Fine.
Since I don't want to upset anyone. But they call
up, it's not a model thing. It's a pilot. But
okay,
go ahead.
Yeah. They call up 2 miles for the left downwind for runway 20. And then they say the magic words, which just brings in terror to all instructors' ears. And they say, any traffic in the area, please advise.
Yeah.
I do not like those terms.
Oh, we used to use it all the time.
Right.
And then I hear, you know, on the AIM and all from my ATC buddies and my other pilots don't. So I stopped doing that about 10 years ago.
Good, good. I used it once and I got reamed out by another pilot about 5 years ago. Never did it again.
Yep, good for you.
Yeah. So we call back, yeah, we're lining up and waiting on runway 9. The other Cessna is saying, we're doing a touch and go on runway 9. There's actually another airplane inbound for runway 9. And he gets all mad that we're on runway 9. We were there first. I don't understand.
Yeah, really.
He said, well, I'm lined up. I'm on the downwind for runway 20. Great.
He could have easily entered a left downwind for 9. Just
exactly.
Do a 90-degree turn, essentially.
Yeah. You know, it may have taken 30 extra seconds. He might have burned 0.25 extra gallons, but it would have kept everything a lot more efficient, a lot more safe. Now I was looking out, seeing where this person was. Maybe if he called out 10 miles out, we could have accommodated that. Oh, sure. I would be more than happy to hold on the runway and let this guy land on the crossing runway. But he called out 2 miles out. I don't even think he checked the weather because he told us the wind was right down runway 20, and it wasn't.
So, again, on non-towered field.
Correct, yeah.
He did nothing wrong. He got to the airport. He announced his intentions. He announced his location. Everyone else needs to incorporate that into their thinking.
Right, but he didn't do it courteously.
Okay. Did nothing wrong, but wasn't
sure.
Courteous and certainly could have given more notice. And
right.
All of the above. I agree. And if I had heard that, I would have said, you know what? I'm switching to 9. But
he ended up switch to 9.
Oh, he did?
He did, yeah, thankfully, because there was multiple airplanes on 9, and he did decide to switch to 9.
Well, so then everything worked out okay.
And I might add that if he landed on runway 9, it would have been a shorter taxi to the ramp anyway. To begin with.
But it's his right to land on 20.
It is. It is his right to land with a crosswind. Totally understand that.
Yeah. Well, you had a crosswind, too.
Right. We had
a
bigger crosswind.
So it's interesting. Crosswind. We talk about they should have done this, and I agree, by the way. So many times I'm coming straight in, and all of a sudden I hear traffic start to build, and while it's my right to come straight in, I'll then adjust my approach such that I can make something that allows me to fit in, whether it's a upwind, crosswind, you know, that type of thing.
Right. I mean, it is your right to come straight in only if it does not disrupt traffic.
No, it is my right to come in.
Straight in only if it does not disrupt traffic.
I don't... our buddy, our DPE friend that is retired from United always talks about that you don't have to do a pattern or anything like that. It's encouraged, but...
Yeah. Correct, yeah. But if there's multiple airplanes in the pattern, you should follow suit with them.
I think it's good behavior. Good, I was going to say good potty training, right? You know, I agree, right? It's got to be safe. You got to fit in. Got to work together to keep it safe. But where does it say? And you're the CFI, and I'm not. That you can't come in a right hand pattern when everyone else's left hand is doing left hand. All right, ladies and gentlemen, he just picked up his iPad. He's going to quickly check the far aim.
I have an app.
Oh, you have an app. I don't want to take a lot of time here. I mean, probably Martin or someone. By the way, while we're waiting for you to look that up, I got a tweet from Martin earlier about, I got to see what it said. Where are we at? Tell all the EAA B-17 will be at Davenport, DVN, Delta Victor November, this coming weekend. Fly in or drive in and see us. Oh, Martin, that must be where you're at. I mean, that's maybe where you live. I probably don't even know where you live. Regardless, the EAA B-17, is that the aluminum overcast? I don't want to. There's also.
I believe so.
Is that there's what's the other one that I'm thinking of?
Thinking
with
of
name? Fifi.
Fifi, that's the B-29.
Oh, okay.
And then there's Boxcar.
Okay. Well, anyway, the EAA B-17 will be at Davenport this coming weekend. Fly in and drive or drive in and see us. That comes from Martin Santik. Thank you very much. So you're still looking it up, but
yes.
We may have to follow next week with the final answer here. We all violently agree that it makes sense to fit into the pattern, but unless I'm remembering incorrectly, which could be the case, there is no requirements in a non-towered airport to have to come in on a 45 or do a downwind followed by a crosswind or base leg.
You don't have to do the 45 to left downwind, and then I do know that you have to make left turns.
Yeah, I think we'll pick it up next week. Okay.
Sounds like a plan.
Again, I hate to get picky on one, but I'm just repeating what I heard from someone I respect that was a designated pilot examiner who, again, I can't think said the same thing, got to be safe, but let's just remember that a pilot can operate their airplane and they have to follow the right-of-way rules, right?
That's correct.
But from a pattern perspective, there's nothing that's regulatory. I'm waiting for the tweets to start coming in. Anyway, so let's see. I'm looking at my notes here. People heard me do my rant a couple weeks ago.
What was your rant?
My rant was on the Icon A5 and the strong arm intent of the CEO. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
Oh, my goodness. So I don't remember it all off the top of my head, but basically, if you bought an Icon A5...
Which I bought 10 of them.
Yeah, right. You couldn't sell it unless you sold it to someone that Icon approved. Icon wanted a piece of the pie. They said, you can't sue us unless you give us, I don't know, $10,000, $20,000 more if something goes wrong. And his view... And there were some other things. He had to be trained by them and all. It was
interesting.
It was so over the top. And we say, hey, if it's our fault, we'll go ahead and pay the lawsuit, you know, if it kills you. But if it's your fault, we shouldn't have to.
Makes sense, yeah.
It kind of does, but it doesn't. Because he said we'll use the NTSB findings. NTSB findings, 99 times out of 100 that I've read them, they say it was the pilot's fault for not being able to control the airplane after the wing fell off.
I'm being
silly here. It always blames the pilot. And I just don't think those kind of strong arm tactics, which people can choose to do, I would not take advantage of that. Avadyne hit the same problem when they said to get an extended warranty or cheaper price, I forget exactly what it was, you know, that you have to agree never to sue us. Because everyone's sue happy.
Of course.
And they took a tremendous backlash. And so Al thought I was a little rough, I think, on Icon. But I just said it's not right the way it's positioned. This on an aircraft that was supposed to be 139, then 189,000. Now yet it's 239 to get into it, and to tell me who I can sell to and who I can't,
that
and that you're
going
to take,
yeah,
those kinds of things.
I've never heard of that before. That must be new.
It was in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
No. I mean, in any aircraft sales position.
Yeah. Yeah. So I am pleased to say that the company, and I apologize, I can't remember the CEO's name.
Mr. Icon
basically said, we're willing to look at it because there was so much backlash over what had come out. He didn't say he was going to fix it or change anything. They're willing to review it. And I think that's progress. I think there is middle ground. And wouldn't it be great if we had some reform that when something went wrong, our aircraft manufacturers weren't automatically sued because they have deep pockets, you know, people that fly their airplane in the ground and then say, well, you didn't train me right. And that's happened to Cirrus, although Cirrus eventually won that.
Well, isn't that what happened back in the 80s with and early 90s with limited liability with aircraft manufacturers?
Yeah, so President Clinton brought that in, and that kind of saved the industry. That's why there's so many aircraft from the 70s. They stopped making them
Which I had no idea.
Yeah, basically because you could sell someone something in 1940, it crashes in the year 2000, and you say, oh, it's your fault.
When that person flew into clouds and icing and did all this other illegal things.
So they, I forget, was it 14 years or some? There was some limit to the number of years of liability that was enacted, and then now it made sense for manufacturers to get back in the business of building airplanes, which was very much necessary. I think the issue is not with pilots and not with manufacturers. Everything is so happy. Now, if someone is negligent,
right,
they should be held accountable for that.
Sure.
But just to say, oh, I'm going after everyone, that plane crashed, it's not the pilot's fault, so we want to sue everybody, or we want to sue the pilot too, and whoever's the deepest pocket will get the hardest hit.
And you know it's not the pilot.
Well, usually it is the pilot, but not all the time, right? I'm not going to retract what I just said. The NTSB will always say it's the pilot.
No, I'm saying the deepest pocket.
Oh, right. That's why you got to go after the manufacturers. Yeah. You have to go, or they do go after the manufacturers. You don't have to. But again, that the manufacturer in that Cirrus case, and that was sometime in the last 6 months, I remember we talked about it. They said, you didn't train us right, that we flew wrong because I did it the way Cirrus trained me, and they won that one.
Okay.
Because, you know, they didn't tell me I wasn't supposed to go in from VMC into IMC. You're not supposed to go VMC. You got to know that.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I think I remember that from a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
I think.
I think. Yeah. So it's nuts. But anyway, so I'm glad that person came around. We're going to always run into jerk pilots, right?
Right.
Some jerky because that's who they are. Others, maybe they're not thinking clearly, or it just comes across wrong, and they're really not bad people. Just they're on a stabilized approach. They don't want to change at this point. And so they say, well, I'm sorry, I'm coming in here. Kind of adjust to me. I'm watching for crossing traffic.
Sure.
The thing that bugs me more is I was at RPJ, Rochelle, and the winds were almost 90 degrees, but favoring 2-5.
Okay.
I'm making radio calls. I say, okay, I'm going to back taxi because there's no parallel.
Right.
Runway. I'm going to back taxi to 2-5. And as I get on the end of 2-5, right, facing kind of west.
Sure.
I do 180. I'm on the numbers. I see an airplane coming toward me landing. Never made a radio call. Landed on 7.
Do they have a radio?
I don't know.
Who knows?
I'm just sitting out there. I'm sitting at the end. Hopefully this guy can stop. It's a long runway. There's no reason why he should go to the end. But for people that go to non-towered airports, don't make a call. Land on a runway. Again, there was no ATIS. That was AWOS or ASOS, one of the two. It was giving minute-by-minute reports, and the wind was favoring 2-5.
What type of plane was it?
It was like a Cessna or something. I mean, it was just weird that because you're trying to pick it out, and I go, wow, where did he come from, and what's he doing? So that's kind of one of my pet
maybe
peeves.
He was really hungry.
Yeah, for the restaurant, right? Or maybe he just didn't pay attention and had the wrong frequency.
Who knows?
Who knows? So last thing, I think. Yeah, I told you this. You and I went flying right before the
show.
We
did a little pre-show prep.
Right. You put it out on Twitter, so thank you.
Blaine's Planes, Blaine's Planes.
Yeah. You didn't change.
I did not change, no.
Eddie changed his handle, his Twitter handle.
I think I might change it to Airplane Special K or something like that.
There you go. Why Special K?
Well, because Eddie is Radar Cornflakes.
Ba-dum-boom. So the reason why I wanted to go up is I flew the Dakota yesterday, which
all
is...
Right.
You know, it's 78, 79.
Beautiful airplane.
Beautiful airplane. Garmin 650, though, but a Sentry 2 autopilot. And I pride myself. I know the Aztec 55X
front
perfect.
And back.
Front, back, left, and right.
Can you fly it upside down?
I can do all of that.
Okay.
The Avidyne DFC 90, I know it upright, forward, backward.
That's a good autopilot.
It's a great autopilot. A little less I can do because I don't fly much Garmin G1000, but the
Cap 140.
Not a Cap 140.
The GFC 700.
GFC, thank you, 700.
Yeah. Our G1000s, we have two 172 G1000s. One of them is a Cap 140, one is
the GFC 700.
Which I love the GFC 700.
Yeah, it's a great autopilot. Really familiar with that. So when we have the Sentry 2 in this Piper, the 70s vintage Piper, it's not a great autopilot, but it works. And I was trying to fly approaches yesterday using it because I've been focused on the hand flying. And I kind of got it. I didn't feel real confident. So today I said to you, let's go up in the Bonanza sure. because this has the KOC 200. And I wanted to understand, but there's a GPS heading button. It's got your autopilot. I've got my Garmin stack. You know, how do I fly a GPS approach? How do I fly an ILS? How do I fly a pilot-defined intercept angle? So I need to do more. So my question to you with that long preamble is, you fly a lot of airplanes. I don't know how much you use autopilot, but you have two autopilots. Do you fly more? And how do you do moving between airplanes? And is it better just to say, you know what, I'm going to fly this plane with this autopilot when it's IMC, or do you feel comfortable moving from plane to plane?
You know, generally I've been flying. If I am going in IMC, I'll take the GFC 700 so I can have that flight director. I love the flight director. I think it's the...
So you hand fly it.
I hand fly it, yeah, with the flight director. Exactly. The Cap 140 I don't particularly like too much since that's not as smart as the GFC 700. But just switching between the two, basically just got to play with it a few times. Just like what you did today. Obviously, you won't do it in IMC, but you'll just watch a little bit more than you would... On a VMC day.
VMC, okay. Interesting. Well, I don't feel as confident. So, because we just played a little bit because we had to get back and do the show, but it was...
Responsibilities.
Yeah. But it was just disconcerting to me because I'm so, again, I believe I can be so technically adept at the technology in the airplane.
Right.
And then to have questions... If it were IMC and all of a sudden I want to push a button, I mean, I can get the plane to fly straight and level on the course, but is it the heading or the GPS button? And once I push one of those, now I go to the autopilot. Is it approach? Is it nav? Is it heading? And some of those don't even matter. We were finding it was still turning with or without. So
right.
I think it's great to fly a lot of airplanes, but it's incumbent upon all of us to make sure that you practice with all airplanes.
Sure. I think the airplane, the actual flying itself, is pretty straightforward. It's an airplane. It's going to fly.
Right.
Versus the autopilot, between one and another, who knows? It's totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. So what do you got going this week? More flying, I'm sure.
More flying, yep. I have a high-performance lesson tomorrow morning in our 182.
You're excited. Isn't that you want to get out of the 172, right?
I love the 182. I love anything high-performance. I love anything that cruises actually greater than 110 knots.
Yeah, no, I hear you. That's another thing about, I don't know, we'll see about my retirement job, but I like I say, I think I would enjoy it, I would love it, but after you get a one or two, you want to do the more advanced type training. I would think, who the heck knows? I might fall in love with it.
Each student is different, and each student has their challenges and their rewards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love the BFRs. I love doing aircraft checkouts. I love doing the discovery flights. And, yeah, I do love having the students as well, too. But also just throwing in the different mix of different backgrounds and hearing the stories from the pilots that I fly with of, oh, I flew down in Florida for all my licenses and now I'm up here. Or I flew up in Leadville for 10 years and now they're down here. And it's totally different flying. Crazy.
Yeah, indeed. Leadville, I've never been there. Have you?
No, I've never.
Okay.
But the first time he did a short field or a soft field takeoff, he was very surprised that the nose came off the ground so quickly.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. I have a picture of a friend who landed at Leadville. It's one of those bucket list items. Well, anyway, this week I hope to be able to use it in business with a Peoria and a Detroit trip. But
where in Peoria? Because I was actually down there last week with a student.
Well, I'd come into the main airport.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, not, we went to... Not,
you went to Three Mike Yankee?
Yeah, Mount Holly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great little airport. There's a great DP, or not DP, AME,
yeah.
Medical guy there. That's so where I go get my medical. He's right there at the airport. Works well. Right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be time for us to move on, but thank you, Josh, for stepping in for Captain Waterloo.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And our thanks to Janine Iannarelli of Paravion Limited for her insight of what's going on in the jet market and business market and business aviation. What wasn't the most positive news? You know, the good news is that we are kind of a, she said, let's call it a heartbeat report. So there'll be good quarters and bad quarters. So kind of operating as expected, and we just need to see a comeback, and maybe after the election we'll get some stability back. And as she said, confidence. And our thanks to all of you for listening in. Again, it's important. It's the reason why Al and I, and Josh when Al's not here, do this, is because there seems to be a lot of interest and demand for what we're talking about. It's all because we have the same passion. So our thanks to you for listening in. Please send us email or tweets or whatever to get in contact with us for any feedback and other things you'd like to see on the show. But until then, we wish all of you a great week, blue skies,
strong tailwinds.
Oh, you filled in great. Good night, everybody.